Hi, this is David Ault from Darker Projects, the No Sleep Podcast, and the Sonic Society, where we play the very best in modern audio drama. But if you want to create your own audio drama for us to broadcast, then you need to listen to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome, listeners old and new, to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. On this week's episode, we're looking at ways to improve your audio drama. Seven of them, Matthew.
Yeah, number seven. It was the number that Eric Cantona used to wear on his back when he played for Man United. And I bet the listener's thinking, what has Eric Cantona got to do with audio drama? He's not remotely topical or anything like that. What could he possibly have to do with audio drama? I suppose nothing's the answer. Well, completely irrelevant to this episode.
The big surprise is that, yes, absolutely nothing. But Eric Cantona, a footballer I loved and admired once upon a time. But that aside, yep, completely irrelevant. But let's get back to it. seven ways. I was actually born on the seventh day, you know. Not the biblical seventh.
I think before we dive into this, we should just clarify for the listener that we're sitting here in the car in the midst of, is it Hurricane Abigail? It's not quite a hurricane in Scotland, but it's
Storm
a, and Abigail also your daughter's name. So how's that working out?
Storm indoors, storm outdoors. And she's rather pleased that the storm seems to have been named after her. She's happy with that, and quite apt, I would say, as well.
Yeah, a good bit of background ambience, at least, for the listener, for the duration of this podcast episode. So, yeah, we're going to talk through, you know, this episode kind of is more geared towards people who are sort of beginners or novices, people who haven't been producing too long, but hopefully the content's still relevant for those of you that have been doing it
for a
year or two as well, because I think all the points that we're going to make are really valid towards just improving the quality and making sure you're not lowering the standards or on anything that you're doing. And that's, you know, in writing and production, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think a lot of these points, they serve as good reminders, and also those things that you probably knew all along intuitively but never heard them spoken out loud, if you know what I mean. Like, something you would just take for granted. Well, you are indeed doing the right thing, and here's why. So, it's that kind of thing.
So let's proceed to point number one. We want to just talk about sitting down and listening to a well-produced, professional-quality audio drama, something that you really like and admire from a respected producer, and sit and listen to it critically, because I want you to write down or at least memorise what each scene is. How does the scene start? What happens in the scene? What's the point of the scene? Because in professional sort of level audio drama, every scene has a purpose, doesn't it? It's not just, they've never thrown a scene in there just because, you know, let's have a scene now.
There's no accidents, for sure. Everything from the music to the background ambience, it serves to somehow complement or add to or inform the listener, perhaps. You know, like the opening music, if it's kind of ethereal, a little bit magical, then there's probably some element of spookiness going on, you know. Or if it's kind of tense music, then there's a problem coming. You know, it's not just thrown in there. If people are reveling and having a good time in the background, it's because that's the type of atmosphere they want to get across to you. All the things that you think you're clever about picking up on, it's been an intention. You know, they've intended to tell you. So have a think about these scenes and listen to every noise you hear and work out why it's there.
Yeah, and look at the dialogue. What are the characters talking about when the scene starts? What do they talk about in the scene as it progresses? And how does the conversation end? Does it end? You know, the scene will end. The conversation might not necessarily end, because it might just be cutting into somewhere else right in the middle of it. But we have two examples to give you. We're Alive, Need It Zero. I'm joking. we came up with two other shows that we really like that we're going to talk about. So, Robert, the Sound of Thunder, that's off the Bradbury 13 series. I first heard this back a few years ago on Radio Drama Revival. Fred played The Sound of Thunder, which is one of the episodes, and he had a great interview with Mike McDonough, who was the sound designer and the producer of these shows. And, you know, back then I was thinking, I love listening to stuff like this, and I suppose that might maybe subconsciously led to us doing this very podcast series. But what a great story it is. We're not going to go right through the story, but we just want to talk about the first couple of scenes, don't we?
Yeah, I decided to have another listen to it. I'd heard it before. I listened to the opening scene again last night, and I was struck immediately by the fact that they obviously tailor the intros to each episode of Bradbury 13 to suit the story. I mean, the stories are all fairly similar in that they're sci-fi and horror and whatnot and tales of interest. But this opening scene, there was grim music, you know, really kind of tense and unsettling, like, oh, there's trouble ahead. And then you kind of hear this thing which can only be explained as some sort of animal-like scream. Maybe a giant, scaly animal from billions of years ago. That sort of thing. So, and it's just a brief scream, and then Bradbury 13.
Sorry. 13.
I was about to say theatre. Bradbury Theatre. Or 13. I don't know. I can't remember which one it was. I was too busy thinking about the dinosaur scream. I mean, animal scream. So, you know, talk about setting the scene. Okay, it's tense. There's dinosaurs, but what's going on? Suddenly, you know, there's a busy atmosphere. You can hear this guy sounds agitated. He's obviously a customer. He's looking for some action. And then there's a salesman talking to him. The second guy's a salesman. And he's slick and confident that we'll be able to provide you with exactly what you want. There's not a word wasted. There's a futuristic door opens. Futuristic, okay. And the guy says, I've got to tell you, I've been on safari before. Oh, don't you worry about that. We'll show you the best time possible. And I want a T-Rex. So eventually, a few lines in. Okay, T-Rex. Oh, wow. A real time machine. Okay, so it's not like the guy said, hey, I want to go in your time machine to shoot dinosaurs. The story isn't called Dinosaur Safari. That's the thing about these stories as well, is it's a 30-minute one-off. They've got to get all the information out there without being clumsy about it. And if you do listen to this scene, it comes at you one line at a time, and it's quite appropriate, and it doesn't feel like you're being slapped in the face. Another thing I noticed in that scene, they talked about the current president. I can't remember his name now. I didn't write it here for some reason. Deutsche, I think it was, in fact. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, they had a good-sounding guy and a bad-sounding guy, and I think they were talking about an election. Who are you voting for, the good guy or the bad guy? Oh, yeah. Wouldn't he vote for the bad guy, you know?
And that is a big part of the story later on, but you don't realise it because you're not being slapped in the face. You know, oh, I'd hate for something to alter the course of history and for the bad guy to get in. So these are some of the things that I picked up from that scene, is that they did it bit by bit. They got the information out in small chunks. There was the old Chekhov's gun, when they say, here's a thing that you will observe, probably remember later on, but won't think too much about it just now. Maybe it will come into play later. And that's another thing. One more thing I noticed. The characters were busy. They were doing something. They met up, they talked, they walked, they opened a door, they came in, they looked at the machine, all whilst talking and getting the information out. And I think that was important as well, rather than just having some people standing talking to each other. I think that happens too often in audio drama because you don't see a lot, so therefore in order to get information out you need people talking, and characters will often simply talk at each other for too long.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not totally averse to having two characters talking, but I certainly think from a production point of view as well, you're making it more pleasurable for the producer, whether that's you or someone else, when you have characters doing something as well as talking. Because if you're just writing a conversation between two characters in a room, the producer then has to work a lot harder to make that soundscape interesting. Because, like, you know, what's the sound of just a room with two people sitting at a table? You might have a clock, you might have a kettle boiling. But how many times have we heard stuff like that? So at least you get your characters on the move and further in the plot, and it's more pleasurable to produce and probably to listen to as well.
Yeah, and if you're busy trying to put noises in to fill up the scene, then you run the risk of distracting people from what they're talking about, because what they're talking about and the noise are often two different things at that point. So that, again, that's something to be aware of. But that's everything I wrote down about that particular scene. What about you? You had one, didn't you?
Yeah, Neverwhere, which is, you know, the listener might well be familiar with. That's a Dirk Maggs production of a Neil Gaiman novel and TV series. So Neverwhere is just brilliant, you know, arguably the best ever audio drama. And I was listening to it again this morning just to take some notes. So there's no, you know, it doesn't start with any credits or anything like that. You get the token wee guy that says, "This is Audible." I wonder who he is. But right. Jump straight into the sound of something's burning. It could be a building. And here's two sinister sounding guys having a conversation about burning a monastery. So there you go. You've immediately arrived in this scene. There's no doubt as to the fact that these are two undesirable characters. They've lit a church on fire, and they have a short conversation about what's next, and one of them says 500 years north into the future to basically kill some people.
To go and kill orphans with diseases.
Yeah, so that's all happened in just over 1 minute. And then we cut, again, bearing in mind you've not had any credits at this point or any intro music.
Yeah.
We cut to the sound of what's obviously outside, like a nightclub. You've got pumping music and you hear, it's not like the front door, it sounds more like a fire exit being opened. And James McAvoy, who's the main character, he comes out and you just hear him shouting to someone, "Just let him out for a bit of fresh air." And you can hear that he's obviously in some sort of back alleyway. And this woman appears saying to him, like, "Oh, you can't sleep here, son." It's something along the lines of, I do all the time and I always get moved on. So straight away, you identify her as possibly being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains that he's not going to sleep there. He's on a night out. He's on his work's leaving night out because he's got a new job in London. So that's, again, more information. The scene's been set all the time here.
Clever. The old woman, homeless, that points to it being an alley.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't pick that up from the sound, but also gives him the opportunity to say, "Well, I happen to be a young man who's actually well-to-do on a leaving night because,"
yeah,
"and you'll like this bit." And the old woman's like, no.
And it's totally non-expositional. You know, it's not like this presentation of dialogue to each,
yeah,
other, these facts. It's very conversational, very natural. So the woman, again, it points to her sort of being a quirky sort of homeless woman because she insists on reading his palm, which he's a bit sceptical about. Her tone turns a bit more serious when she gets a look at his hand, and she tells him it's something along the lines that he's got a long way to go. And he says, "Well, yeah, London." And she's like, "No, it's not the London I know." So straight away, here's this sinister undertone suggesting that this big sweeping adventure's about to take place.
And that it's beyond the normal, our normal horizons as well.
And it sort of ends with, like, the rain comes bursting on quite heavy, and he's holding an umbrella, so he gives her it, and she thanks him and offers him some parting advice. She says, "It starts with the doors. I'd watch out for the doors if I was you." And he thanks her in a sort of manner where he obviously thinks she's just a harmless oddball. So that all happens in like 2.5 minutes. Now imagine just how much information the listener has in those 2.5 minutes. Like, you've covered, there's time travel, there's a couple of church burning guys heading to the future on an adventure. Here's your normal guy, your Scottish young man who's got a job down in London. He's none the wiser that all this is about to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
He's already had his fortune told, so you know that he's going to be heavily involved in all this. And
he's a pleasant sounding guy because it's James McAvoy. He's a good actor, so you like the sound of him because he's being chirpy and upbeat, and he's being kind enough to talk to the woman without treating her like crap. So you immediately invest in him as well. You know, he was obviously an important choice that they made for the main character. You know he's the main character.
So, again, we've only mentioned the start of these two because it would be worth an episode on its own just to go through it. But the point is for you to go away and pick one or two of your favourite audio dramas from your favourite producers and go through it scene by scene and just make notes like this. And you know, it'd be great if you could get in touch with your thoughts as well, sum them up, and if there's any really interesting scenes that you notice where something, a technique's been carried out in the writing, get in touch with us and let us know, and we can bring this up again. But that is point one, is to just break down the scenes of some top quality professional standard audio dramas.
And moving on to point B, which we like to call two, try to include a marquee scene. And by that we mean one that a scene that really showcases your production and, to an extent, your writing talents as well. For instance, you might have a story that revolves around a fictional creature or a monster or something, and there will come a point in the story where, you know, you really want to pull the curtain back and show that monster in its full glory, roaring and being all monstery and stuff, because you might have just hinted at the monster throughout the story. Eventually, like all good horror stories, you need the monster to be on display and do its thing.
Yeah, it's that point where you're mixing a show and there's always, I feel, that one scene that you just take that wee bit more time on. You know, you really put a lot of work into creating a sound that makes this particular show really unique. And that might be something like if you're doing some sort of show that involved like fighter jets, there might be some big battle in the sky between the planes, or maybe you're doing a story on a cruise liner, maybe you're doing some Titanic fan fiction and the marquee scene would just be the sound of the boat actually sinking. So it's picking this like big climactic moment. It doesn't have to be, I suppose, but if you were to pick the big climax in the story and just really work on the soundscape and give it that wee bit extra attention and make that be the point that people look back on and say, I love how you executed that particular sound in that scene.
Yeah, everybody knows the big scenes, whether it's films or audio, where something incredible happens. Like Titanic, everybody remembers the bit where it sinks and then it cracks in half and the other bit comes down and the guy falls and hits the propeller on the way down, for instance. Jaws, I was thinking about Jaws earlier with the you know, there's not a lot happens for the first half hour, and when you're a kid you're like, come on, I want to see the shark. But suddenly there's one or two or three particular scenes where the shark does its thing and you're like, wow, this is worth waiting for. And if you had that all the way through, just nothing but a shark eating people, then it wouldn't be anywhere near as good. So those scenes are important because they're standout key moments. Try to come up with that if you can. And again, avoid just having people talking to each other for the duration.
So on to three now. During the writing process, consider spatialisation. Now, this is something that I did quite a lot of at uni. It was the Cat and Doug audio drama that I'd produced when I was at university. So for a lot of the planning, it involved actually drawing out the rooms and locations that each scene was taking place and marking out where the characters actually are and sort of penciling out any routes, if someone might be walking or on the move or if they change places or things like that. And I know that this might seem like overkill, but this actually helps a lot in the production process. Robert, I remember quite a while ago when we were producing an Aftermath episode together and we had two characters driving in a car and we obviously had them panned to either side. One of them was making reference to the other one driving, but we actually had them panned to the wrong side, so at the last minute we realised and managed to swap them round. Now, I know you could say that it was an imported American car or something like that, but yeah. Authenticity is important, even though maybe no one will notice it. It's always good just to be very clear where everyone is, where they're moving to, things like that. It just helps you. It could be considered overkill, but I think to be spatially aware in your audio dramas is really important, especially if you're working in stereo and doing a bit of panning. It's going to help you quite a lot.
Yeah, and it makes the scene very clear in your mind exactly what's going on, which can only be a good thing, rather than just having people floating and turning up here and then you've put them to the other side of the room just to change things up, but there's not been any reason to do so, or you know, you haven't really thought about it. And things like that can really distract a listener and pop them out, because suddenly their mind is wandering and they're thinking about what's going on in the room and then they miss a bit of dialogue. So, you know, it's always worth remembering that you don't want to distract the listener. You want them to be aware of everything at the same time, if that makes sense. without having to suddenly devote more brain power to one aspect. It should all just happen naturally and they don't even have to think about it.
Yep, so number four, we're going to talk about dialogue. This is, I suppose, pretty topical at the moment, the subject of dialogue. Less is more, Robert. Cut, cut, cut. Is your character saying in five sentences what she can say in one?
Yeah, this is the one skill every writer needs to learn, and they need to learn it early on as well. You know, you'll be so busy getting stuff out on the page in terms of dialogue, getting out exactly what they want to say, that you've said it three times to be absolutely sure that they're covering it properly and that information is out. But then if you look at it and think to yourself, do they need to know all of that? What can I cut here? If I absolutely had to cut it down, like, it, you know, if anybody out there tweets, for instance, and you've gone right over your character limit and you think, well, how much could I cut out here? No, it's the perfect tweet. Damn it. But if you have to, you can, and you always do, and you cut it down. Be brutal. Be absolutely ruthless. You'll be surprised what you can take out.
Yeah, I really liked, I'm sure it was Brian Lincoln who, of course, put together that really excellent Writers' Roundtable episode for us last week, which we really enjoyed. And I'm sure it was him that said that he had sent out scripts to his actors for the show that he's working on. But he's actually, you know, he gets lines back, and then I think he sends a provisional mix down out to everyone again so they could get a listen to it and they could re-record anything they don't like. But he said, and I'm paraphrasing him here, so he was amazed at how when he got these lines back, it was like, you know, a big block of text or audio that actually the last sentence of it was kind of summing it up. So he was actually, he was able to go back and just cut all that. And his end product there is going to be natural dialogue that sounds, you know, it rolls off the tongue, it flows, and it's not just, again, two people making big, huge presentations at each other.
Yeah, like, people do it in everyday life as well. They'll say, yeah, I'm really hungry, you know, because I never got any breakfast because of this, and then when it came to lunchtime, I had something, and then something else, and I'm really hungry because I didn't get anything until, like, I had one snack in the afternoon. So, yeah, I'm really hungry. You know, how many times do you need to say you're hungry? Just cut it out. You know, there's a natural need to, I don't know, have a punchy ending to your paragraph. But that doesn't mean summing it up or repeating yourself. Honestly, go back over any dialogue you've ever written and look at it, especially early stuff, and you'll be like, oh God, that could have been two lines instead of four.
And again, you know, characters cutting each other off and not finishing sentences is always going to make it realistic, because how often do you actually finish a sentence in real life? That was deliberate. How often do you actually finish a sentence in real life without someone cutting you off or without digressing? And in the editing,
well, if I can stop you there.
I knew that was coming. In the editing process as well, when the dialogue allows for it, it's always good to have very minimal space between each line, very punchy dialogue, Even kind of just overlapping each other, and leaving big pauses between lines for, you know, if you really have a reason for some big dramatic pause, or if you want to have a pause there because there's going to be a sound effect in the background that has to demonstrate something. Aside from that, I would really steer clear of having, like, someone say something and then a pause, someone responds and then a pause. You want to make that as punchy and as natural as possible.
Yeah, and one thing you might want to do is try a little experiment. Get your handheld recorder, even if it's just like an app on your phone, and when there's a room with a couple of people in, say more than two, three, four, just record the conversation. Listen back through it. See if you can find any pause. There won't be. If anything, you'll be able to hear at least one or two of those people going, trying to get in at the conversation, trying to get in as everybody's talking and everybody's waiting patiently for their turn to talk, and there is absolutely no gap in the conversation whatsoever. So when you listen to that and then you go to produce your drama, you'll be less likely to have character A say, well, it's time we headed west. Breath. Character B, yes. Character C, because C hasn't spoken yet, I concur. You know, the conversations that you're putting together in fiction, it's difficult, I think, to make them sound real, at least at first, because you're not aware of how a real conversation plays out. and the things at play there, like people not really listening to each other and just waiting to get their bit in, you know, the example that's relevant to them. Yeah, oh yeah, that's like me, because I also did that. Oh, did you? Aye. Anyway, yeah, so try it. Try recording a real conversation between a group of people and listen to it, and it'll be, you'll find it so dynamic, and there's hardly any gaps whatsoever unless people just want to leave.
So on to number five then, and that is to use basic noise reduction techniques. This sounds like a given, but sometimes I do hear dramas where I would have expected this process to have been carried out, and it hasn't been, and there's been very little to disguise the sort of noise floors. This is especially relevant if you're dealing with remote actors, because obviously, as good as your actors will be, they're all recording in very different environments, and when you get these lines in, it's very hard to mask them all and make them sound consistent, like they're in the same place. So if you look at the way dialogue editing looks on your DAW, on your editing software, when you look at the screen, each little line of dialogue basically looks like a brick. It's like you're building a little wall, isn't it?
Yeah.
And each little brick is going to have its own level of noise floor, which is basically just like, you know, the ghost in the machine when the person's recording. Even though they're recording in a sound dampened room and in good conditions, you're still going to get that slight hiss, that slight noise floor. And this is going to vary from person to person, depending on the actor and their microphone and their location and things like that.
You can't get rid of that, can you? Because it's basically the electricity, if you like, that's powering the machine you're using. So
yeah, there's always going to be something.
Yeah.
And especially if you're getting lines in from someone that have been recorded at quite a low gain, you know, they're peaking maybe -12,
yeah,
and you're probably wanting to get them up to maybe -6 to make it consistent with everyone else and work with it. So again, you're bringing that noise floor up. Now, there's various things you can do here, and I had a bit of an experience with this recently, because we recorded Cracking Mare, which should be out in the next couple of weeks, and our friend Caitlin, who's down in London, she's struggling at the moment to find good recording facilities, which is hard to believe because she actually works for the BBC.
Yeah.
But she insists on recording, and hello to Caitlin if she's listening. I hope she doesn't think I'm slagging her off here, but it's just one of those things sometimes, and we've done it a lot in the past. You record on a Zoom under the duvet, but some of the older Zooms do pick up a lot of the room. They're not exactly like, you know, the SM mics or that are only picking up directly in front of you. So when I got the lines in for her, there was a real loud noise floor on it.
Yeah.
And what I did for some of the scenes where she was speaking to other characters was just took a section of room tone from her file and just made like a very long sort of room tone file, which I was able to layer under the dialogue. And then I made sure as well that with each little clip, with each line that came in, it was faded in rather than just letting the cursor hit it naturally.
Boom.
So yeah, you sometimes get a wee pop in your headphones if you do that, so it's better, yeah, just to the tiniest millisecond just to fade it in. And with that room tone underneath, there's actually a tool, and I need to look into this a bit more, but on Adobe Audition you could actually merge files together. So if you had room tone, and again, I'm not sure if this would be any better than just layering room tone underneath.
Yeah.
But you could take everyone else's dialogue and merge it into this room tone as well. So you could make it all basically one file.
Huh.
Again, I'm yet to experiment with it properly to see if it is actually any better. I doubt it would be, to be honest, because it's all been mixed down together anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, but when you get like a really high noise floor or hissing sound underlines, you can obviously use the noise reduction to take that out. But if it's really, really loud, it's just going to annihilate the vocals and strip them a lot of their qualities. So if it's going to do that, you're better just to work with room tone instead and try and mask it.
Yeah.
But don't leave it there. Try and layer the scenes. And again, some producers do miss an opportunity here. They have a conversation and they're just using nothing underneath it. Not any music, not any sound effects. So try and build the sound build the soundscape around the scene. Where are they? Are they outside? So get some rain, you know, like,
yeah,
the sound that we've got just now. You could get some wind, you could get a plane flying past, you could get trees blowing in the background, people walking past. So you've all these opportunities to to mask this sort of imperfections in your audio. And in your final mix, it should barely be noticeable unless someone's putting on like the top of the range pair of headphones and really, really looking for it. And even then, you know, I'm fairly confident that with a bit of work, you can totally mask it all.
It's one thing that we used to use a lot that I don't think we hardly use at all now, unless we can really help it, is noise reduction, especially on Adobe Audition.
I'll tell you what, though, I really, really like the adaptive noise reduction on Adobe Audition nowadays. It's my new favourite noise reduction. And adaptive noise reduction, it's like a sort of seat of the pants plug-in, because you work with it in the multi-track, so you could like assign a plug-in to a channel. So if I put my dialogue on one of the channels, and on that channel I put the adaptive noise reduction, you press spacebar or hit play and you hear the noise floor immediately, so you hear the hissing sound.
Yeah.
And then Adobe Audition like picks up on this sound and says, oh, we have to get rid of that, and you can just hear it disappearing. And then for the rest of the track it's gone. Like, Adobe's working all the time to recognise this noise and to keep it low, so I really, really like that. If you use Adobe Audition, that's well worth using. Up until now, yeah, I'd steered clear of using the noise reduction process on Audition. Not because it's bad, I just think I wasn't very good at it, because noise reduction's a bit of an art, and I was a fan of the Audacity one just because it's very good at generic noise reduction. It does a really good job on most files.
It's a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Audacity does have its limitations, and it was kind of annoying me working in two DAWs.
Yeah.
And now I could actually just work completely in Audition, which is much better, so.
Well, that's interesting. I was on Adobe last night, and I was looking at adaptive noise reduction and thinking, or noise removal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking, yeah, what does that do?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So if like us, which you very well may be, there's things on Adobe that you just don't know what they do, so you've never gotten around to using them or experimenting, bring it to our attention. We might know, we might not. Put it to the group. And let's all have an amnesty where we come clean and we say, you know,
we don't know how to do this.
Yeah, I don't know what a sound floor is, and I'm too afraid to ask. So by all means, you know, because there's a lot in these software packages, and we can't expect to know them all just by mucking about them, because you learn what you need to learn for the basics, and after that anything else is a luxury. Well, now's the time. You deserve that luxury. Let us know what you don't, what you're not comfortable with on your DAW, and we'll sort it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Every day's a school day in the world of audio drama production. Hopefully the listener could still hear us. It is getting a bit mental outside with this storm.
Yeah.
But what can we do? We'll batter on.
I might not go to work tonight.
I don't blame you.
To hell with it. And that brings us nicely to the penultimate point, number 6, which is, don't make your characters tell each other things they already know just because the information is important to the plot. If anything, have them drop hints or make a way for it to be relevant. For instance, say you've got two people and they both already know that one of them's got gum in their hair. We've all had chewing gum in our hair, am I right?
Yes, doing chewing gum volleys.
No, wait a minute, I need to know what that is. What's
a chewing gum volley? I did this.
Is this when you spit it in the air and catch it?
Yeah, and no, you spit it in the air and kick it.
Oh,
I was,
of course.
I was walking to the pub with Julia, my wife, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and just out the blue, spat a bit of chewing gum out, and just the hardest kick you've ever seen, and it went right over the flyover. Like, I'm not sure it reached the other side, but she got a fright, and I was like, that's a chewing gum volley, and I'm really good at them. So that's my story.
So it didn't get in your hair then?
No, but I did do that to a girl at school once. I kicked it and it went in her hair. I didn't mean it, but it was just when you said everyone's had gum in her hair.
They have for them when they've been near you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so two characters, one of them's got gum in their hair. One of them wouldn't say to the other, "You've got gum in your hair," because the other one already knows. Yes, that's right. Thank you for bringing it to the attention of the listener. Instead, you could try something like, right, where are the scissors? Don't look at me like that, it'll grow back. Try keeping that crap in your mouth in future, and better yet, try a mint instead. So, you know, hair, having to cut it out, try a mint instead. Gum in the hair. You know, try and, okay, that was a little bit long-winded, but try and not just have people telling each other, like, well, of course, it is the 7th of November. Yes, it is. Like, if you do that, that's when it'll become expositional, when they're telling each other stuff they already know. So avoid it at all costs. And I think that leads us on to the ultimate point, by which we mean it's the last one, doesn't necessarily mean it's the biggest one. Number 7, try varying the pace of your scenes. One scene could be dialogue heavy, there's nothing wrong with that now and again, whilst two intense characters are sitting, sizing each other up, talking to each other, trying to see what they can get out of the other person, not trying to give anything away, very tense, very involved, and then suddenly you cut to the next scene where a hero is clinging to the roof of a train which is on fire.
We've all been there.
So, you know, and you shouldn't have slow all the way through, and at the same time you shouldn't have the guy jumping out of a window and landing in the swimming pool but then grabbing onto the back of a truck and he's firing a gun into the air because the robots are chasing him. You can't have that forever. You cannot have that for the full pace because people just get exhausted. Vary it. Get it up, get it down. Even a DJ will tell you that. He'll play a slow song or two, then get onto the funky fat beats or whatever it is they do nowadays. That's about all we've got time for because we've got to get out of this storm now, Matthew, don't we?
Yeah, we've got to go and batten down the hatches.
Do you have hatches?
I don't know, actually. I don't think I've ever had hatches.
Yeah. Oh, well. If you want to get in touch, please do. You can do so the usual ways, Facebook, Twitter, even the electronic mail address, which is podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. We'd love to hear from you on any subject relevant to audio drama, maybe even a few other things like, I don't know, beer, football?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Get in touch. Especially, remember what I said earlier on about... what did I say earlier on again? I've forgotten.
Something, audio drama, something.
Yeah, the DAW stuff. If there's anything on there that you're like, I wonder what that is, it might be something really useful, but I'm not mucking about with it. Ask us, and we'll ask the community.
We'll ask somebody who knows.
Yeah.
yeah, and the scene stuff too. If you do end up sitting down and breaking down an audio drama into scenes and something comes up that's quite interesting, get that into us as well, because I'd love to basically learn from it. So,
yeah. I think the overall message here is improve your audio drama as much as you can and get in touch and share the love.
Right, let's get back in our boat. Hurricane Abigail's are coming. Well, she's here. And if you hear from us next week, we survived.
Oh, and I'll leave you with this thought. The first draft of everything is and that was by Hemet Nissingwiri.
I thought it was Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Cheerio then.
Bye-bye.